Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries daily worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the poisoned needle when we come back. Well, John Swinton made an observation one time, and you know, once in a while, we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider like John Swinton. In 1880, he was invited to a dinner, and at the dinner, he was asked to make some comments, and he did. And he said, there's no such thing at this date of world's history in America as an independent press. Now, you know it, and I know it. Now, Swinton was the guest of honor at a banquet which was given to him by the leaders of his craft, and someone who knew neither the press nor John Swinton offered a toast to the independent press. That's when Swinton outraged all of his comments, or his colleagues, by replying that there is no such thing at this date of world's history in America as an independent press. And he went on to say that there's not one of you who dares to write your honest opinions, and if you did, you know beforehand it would never appear in print. And he said, I'm paid weekly for keeping my honest opinions out of the paper that I'm connected with, and others of you are paid similar salaries for similar things, and any of you who would be so foolish as to write your honest opinions would be out on the streets looking for another job. And if I allowed my honest opinions to appear in one issue of my paper before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. He said the business of a journalist is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, and to sell his country and to sell his race for his daily bread. Now you know it and I know it. And what folly is this toasting of an independent press? We are, he said, the tools and vassals of rich men behind the scenes. We're the jumping jacks. They pull the strings. We dance. Our talents and our possibilities and our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes. Well, you know, these rich men behind the scenes are the movers and shakers of this Global 2000 program, this New World Order. The men and families like the Windsors and Rockefellers and the Bushes, the Bundys, the Carnegies and the Vanderbilts. That's why I contend that we ought to wise up and start listening more to the God of Abraham and stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians, and let's prepare to live through and survive this New World Order, this Global 2000 insanity. Now, if you'd like to learn more about Global 2000, Bible prophecy, and this New World Order, why don't you call and order our free 4-hour compact disc package first? That's the place to start. It's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. And you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the archives page and you can download that free general law CD package right there. That's georgegordon.org. Well, I picked up a book the other day called The Poison Needle, written by Eleanor McBean. Eleanor Bean, I believe it is. Nope, it's McBean, M-C-B-E-A-N. First published in 1974. And this is going to be a tough book to find, children, because there was only 10,000 copies made. It's spiral bound. It's about 200 pages, I think. Let's see if I'm right. Yeah, about 225. It deals with vaccination. Now, vaccination here in the United States isn't really a big subject. And the reason for that is that about 88% of Americans believe in it, and they practice it religiously, like going to church on Wednesday and Sunday. Americans have little record cards, and they start out when they're just 2 months old, and they need to fill up these record cards with all these vaccinations. And as I report now, there are 35 authorized vaccinations that we have here in the United States for children between the ages of 2 months and 5 years, 35 vaccinations. And if we have our way, we're going to have it up to 50 vaccinations in the next 10 years. About 2020, we're shooting for 50. Now, we've been doing these vaccinations in this country now for about 100 years. We actually didn't get started until 1932 or 3 with federal mandates for vaccinations. But over the years, we keep adding to that. And really, we got started in earnest with the Salk vaccine of 1955, the polio vaccine. Boy, that really set it off because of the success that we had with smallpox and polio. We want to see if we can't get that same success with all the rest of these diseases. And as a result of that, we have now come up with 35. Now, there's some side effects that are coming down. Well, at least we're not quite sure, but we think that maybe there's some side effects coming down. And 12% of our population, now these 12% are more adamant than the 88% that is in favor of vaccination, but the 12% that are opposed to it, I mean, are really opposed to it. I mean, most of these people could be burned at the stake before they got a vaccine. I'm one of those. I'm really opposed to vaccines and vaccinations. Now, I'm just a reporter, and I don't take sides one way or the other. As a reporter, I have to be as objective as I can. And when it comes to vaccines, I'm not very objective at all. And so I'm just going to tell you going into the program here that I am totally opinionated and in opposition to vaccines. So if that offends you in some way, tune out right now, would you? Now, for the 12% of you that are left and that agree with me going in, we'll talk about this and then preach to the choir for a while. These vaccines over here are a little bit worse than we thought they were. They're bad, and most people that are opposed to them have always known that they're bad, but maybe they didn't understand quite how bad or where this whole thing is leading us. And so I thought I'd tell you a little story here going in, and then we'll review this book here by Eleanor McBean and see if you can get a copy of it. And if you can't, we'll see what we can do. Call the law school and tell us in your badges and tell us, hey, I gotta get a copy of that book. And we'll see what we can do. Now, the bottom line to this story starts with my firstborn son, Ted. When he was about, I don't know, 5, 6 years old, I had him in a little private school over in Berkeley, California. And I like to start my children off in a private school, teach them how to read and write and one thing and another. So he was in this private school, and one day I got a note home, and it said, next Wednesday we're going to have vaccination day, and little Teddy can get his vaccinations. And we just need you to sign this authorization or this permission slip. And there it was, and right in front of me. And so I didn't let any grass grow under my feet. I sat right down and I wrote a letter to the school nurse. And I said, now, next Wednesday, it's my understanding that you're going to have vaccination day, and you're going to vaccinate all the little boys and girls. And that's fine, but I do not want you to vaccinate little Teddy. And in fact, I'm telling you very plainly here, do not vaccinate little Teddy. And if you vaccinate little Teddy next Wednesday, there's going to be litigation. There's going to be serious repercussions. So I don't want you to do that. And so I finished it off, and I said, now, if there's a problem next Wednesday, if for some reason you believe that there might be a mistake and you might accidentally vaccinate little Teddy, accidentally, I'll keep him home. I won't let him go to school next Wednesday, so there's no mistakes. But in the meantime, I'm planning to go ahead and send him to school, and I'm figuring that you can just exempt him, and that'll be the end of it. And so a day or two, I sent my little boy off to school the next day, and you know, about the next day, I got a call from the school nurse. And boy, was she excited. And she wanted to explain to me what it was that I maybe didn't know or understand about vaccinations. And so I wanted to be courteous and I wanted to be polite. And so I sat there on the telephone in my office listening, and she preached me a sermon about vaccines and vaccinations and about how the world has been saved by vaccines, and that if little Teddy isn't vaccinated, then I'm putting him at risk, and there's no sense putting him at risk because we can vaccinate him and protect him. And wouldn't I like to protect my little boy Teddy from all these diseases and all these evil things that are going on out there in the world? And pretty soon after she finished telling me about all the great benefits from it, I said, well, I really appreciate you taking time out of your busy day to call me and to instruct me and inform me as to these things that I might not know. And I said, let me ask you a question here. If my little boy Teddy was vaccinated, would that protect him from getting these loathsome diseases? And she said, oh, yes, yes, absolutely. That's the purpose for vaccination. It is to protect little Teddy from getting one of these loathsome diseases that vaccine and vaccination is designed to protect him from. I said, now, if my little boy Teddy were to get this vaccine, and if he were protected from this loathsome disease, and he were to come in contact with some other little child that didn't have a vaccine, would it be fair to say that my little boy Teddy could not give this other person one of these loathsome diseases because he's been protected? Oh, yes, yes, that's one of the great benefits of vaccines. You see, once your little boy is protected, he cannot spread this disease to anybody else. So I said, well, now, how many of the students in my little boy Teddy's class are you planning on vaccinating next Wednesday? And she said, well, there's 42 children in the class, and 41 of them are going to be vaccinated, and only little Teddy at this moment in time is not scheduled for vaccination. So let me ask you one more question here. Let's assume that all of the rest of these 41 children in little Teddy's class are all vaccinated. Would it be fair to say then that if my little boy Ted was not vaccinated, that he could not get one of these loathsome diseases from any one of these 41 children because they've all been vaccinated and protected? And they can't get the disease, and they can't spread the disease. And she said, oh, yes, yes, that's very true. And your little boy Ted over there would be protected by the fact that all the rest of these little children have been vaccinated, and they could not spread the disease to Ted. And I said, now, my last question is this. Let's suppose for the sake of our discussion that my little boy Ted is the only child who isn't vaccinated, and all the other little children are vaccinated. Now, based upon what we've discussed so far, my little boy Ted, even if he had some loathsome disease, could not give that disease to any of the other little boys and girls because they've all been vaccinated and protected. Is that a fair statement? And she said, yes, of course, that's the purpose for vaccination. And I said, then the other 41 children can't give little Teddy any loathsome disease because they don't have it, can't get it, can't transmit it because they've all been vaccinated. Isn't that true? Oh, yes, yes, that's very true. I said, well, that solves everybody's problem, doesn't it? You see, my little boy Teddy isn't going to be vaccinated. And all of the other little boys and girls are. So my little boy Ted is no threat to them, and they're no threat to him. And there was a long pregnant pause on the telephone. And then she came back and said, in effect, that I would have to hate my own child Ted not to have him vaccinated and protected. And I said, what's the need? He can't get the disease from any of the other little boys and girls. Well, he might be out on the street, and he might get it from somebody else. Yeah, that's a possibility. But if he does, he can't give it to any of your little protected boys and girls, and that's what you're really concerned about, isn't it? Now, I'm all in favor of eradicating disease, but I'm not sure that I can eradicate disease by way of vaccination. I'm not fully persuaded. In fact, I've been persuaded in the other direction. And I thought that I'd share this with you, just in case maybe you haven't tuned me out totally. Let me give you the rest of the story, as old Paul Harvey used to say. Now, the increasing flood of evidence against vaccination and the growing demand for the unsuppressed facts about this touchy subject have literally forced this book into being. As this work has progressed and the extensive research has been carried on to trace down and then to organize the material for this manuscript, other valuable and long-concealed records that I had not expected have come into my hands as if by some unseen power. It is to be hoped that the information contained within these pages will help to sweep away the tragic errors that cloud the minds of the people as well as the physicians. Now, it's urgent that the living words of truth or some other force be applied to abolish that deadly weapon, the poison needle, which has been the menacing roadblock standing in the way of progress in the healing field for all of these many years. Vaccination and the false germ theory upon which it is hinged has led mankind far astray and has severed the fragile thread that offered medical theory and practice a hope of becoming a science. Under the sway of our present degenerative medical methods, the health of our people has declined to the lowest point in history. The 1955 survey showed that over 90% of our population is below par mentally and physically. And according to life insurance records, army reports, hospital statements, government statistics, and physical examinations for marriage certificates and employment, it has been revealed that there is hardly one normal, healthy person in 100 left in the United States of America. I'm going to pause right there, boys and girls. I want to pause there. In 1917, in the United States Army, when people were being drafted, they discovered that 40% of the young men in America were physically unfit for military service in 1917. 40%. Now, in 1917, it was a scandal, and that is shocking. When you take a look at 100 18 to 21-year-old young men in the absolute peak, pinnacle of health in their lives, I mean, if it isn't between 18 and 21, did you think you're going to find it between 85 and 92? Is that when people reach the peak of their strength, of their virility, of their health? Boys and girls, I'm an old man. And I'm still not wearing glasses, and I'm still not wearing a hearing aid, and I'm still able to get up and walk around. And I can tell you I'm nowhere near the man I was when I was 18 to 21. But I could have made it into the Army if I'd have put my mind to it, but 40% in 1917 couldn't. Let me tell you this. In 1917, that 40%, every one of them had something wrong with them. 60% were symptom-free, and 40% had some kind of symptom. Today, 99% of Americans have a symptom of some kind. Only 1% of Americans, as I speak in 2010, are symptom-free. Now, as I speak in 2010, the projections for the future are that 50% of all Americans will have cancer at some point in their life. 50%, one out of two. By 2020, they tell us that every person born after the year 2020 can expect to get cancer statistically one time in his life. Now, boys and girls, now that's going in the wrong direction. Going from 60% to 99% with symptoms is the wrong way, isn't it? Now, during that same period of time, we've been vaccinating more people more often. Now, I don't know if vaccination's bad for you, but I guarantee you this, hadn't solved your problems. Kind of like voting. You know, they tell us the solution to our political problems are voting. That is, if you vote, you can solve our political problems. And I tell people very plainly, well, if that's true, we shouldn't have any problems at all, because we've been voting now for 230 years. Now, we've been vaccinating more people with more shots more often than any time in our history, and at the very same time, we're getting sicker and sicker. That doesn't tell us that vaccination causes disease, but it does tell us this. Vaccination doesn't prevent it either. Now wake up and smell the coffee here, kids. Now, the Cancer Foundation states that one out of every four is marked for cancer. Now, notice this, one out of every four in 1974. Now, let me back you up here a little bit, boys and girls, and let me tell you some numbers. Write it down. Get your pen out here. 1900, one person out of 33 could expect to get cancer in his lifetime. That's 1900. 50 years later, in 1950, the number was one in five. One in five would get cancer in his lifetime. This book was written in 1974, and by that time, the Cancer Foundation said one out of four. Got that? By the 1980s, it was one out of three. Today, it's one out of two. And by 2020, they tell us one out of one. That's a 100% rate. Now, again, that's not to say that vaccination causes cancer, but vaccination hasn't prevented it. Vaccination, boys and girls, might have caused it, might have exacerbated it, might have done something to promote it, but it didn't do anything to slow it down. And the medical establishment, these are the people that pass out the vaccinations, the people that treat us for cancer, the people that treat us when we go to the doctors and hospitals and so on and so on. These are the people that we're entrusting our health to. We have entrusted our health to the allopathic medical industry. Well, hell, in 1900, we were in better health without any medical assistance from allopathic medicine. Today, we've got compulsory health care insurance. Remember? Did you think it's going to get better or worse? Well, they haven't done jack squat so far. Every year, every dollar, every new innovation has produced poorer and poorer health nationwide. So when I take a look at this, I'm just looking at it like, you know, like Joe Sixpack, and I'm saying, well, the Bible says you'll know them by their fruits. Now just measure the fruit that you're getting here. If you like the fruit you've got, you just stick with allopathic medicine. You need more vaccines and more vaccinations. Get after it. Now, if your brain isn't down around the speed limit someplace, let's start thinking about this. So far, they haven't improved the health of America at all. That doesn't mean that allopathic medicine has caused the degeneration of our health. But whether they caused the degeneration of our health or not is irrelevant. They haven't prevented it. Now, have they? Wake up and smell the coffee here. The figures on heart trouble are even worse, and the other killer diseases that come in for their toll. Practically all of the rest of the people have symptoms of less serious diseases, and these symptoms being headaches, constipation, weak eyes, dental caries, colds, pain, stomach trouble. Most, if not all, of these diseases are avoidable and curable, but not under the deceptive medical method of poisoning the well and the sick with vaccines and drugs and mutilating them with unnecessary operations. When socialized medicine was threatening, a meeting of medical officials was called to discuss just how many and which operations would really be necessary if there was no profit in it. And it was decided that only 3% of surgical operations would be considered essential under those kinds of conditions. So where have the great strides of medical science taken us? Well, let's take a look at operations as an example. People have an appendicitis, and the recommended cure for appendicitis is to cut out your appendix. But is there any other way to treat an appendicitis? No, if you ask the average Joe Sixpack, he'd say, no. And I think operation is the only thing. Well, it's the only thing you heard of. It's the only thing that anybody's ever told you about. I remember listening to a guy named Kent Hovind one time, and here's what old Kent had to say. He was talking to a group of people, and there was a guy in the group didn't like what Kent Hovind had just told him. And that's, I get letters in here all the time, and emails and telephone calls, and when somebody hears something that they didn't like, they'll call me up or write me a letter and say, you lunatic, you fruitcake, you right-wing, radical, reactionary fanatic. See? Well, anyway, old Kent, he listened to this guy as he was spouting off, and he got through, and then Hovind asked him, he said, sir, do you know everything that there is to know in the whole wide world? And the guy said, well, no, I know. Then Hovind came back and he said, now, do you know one half of everything that there is to know in the whole wide world? And the guy said, well, probably not. And then Hovind came back with the closer, and he said, sir, could it be that what I just told you could be one small part of that one half of everything that there is to know in the world that you haven't heard yet? So now, if you're still on board and still listening, let me ask you the same question. You know, I understand your perspective. I mean, hell, I went to public school. I understand allopathic medicine. You know, I went to the doctors, and I've taken my share of pills and one thing and another, but now that I have observed their fruits for the last 100 years, I'm asking the question, well, what's it produced? When I hire somebody and I put him out on a job, I go out and I say, well, let me see what you got down here, son. And then when I get out there and I see this guy hadn't done very much, and I look at him and I say, you know, I'm not sure you're cut out for this kind of work. And the same thing's true here with medicine. You know, when you get down here, you start off and you got one in 33 that has cancer, and you finish the project and you got one out of two that has cancer or is going to get it. I say, you know, I think we were better off before you showed up on the job. We only had one in 33 when we started. Now we got one in two. I don't know if you caused all these people to get all this increased cancer, but I do know this. You sure as hell didn't prevent it. And after all, that's what medicine's here for, isn't it? That's what that nurse said. She wanted to prevent disease. She wanted to protect my little boy, Ted. Wanted to protect him from disease. Loathsome diseases, she called them. Now, after a glance at the medical records covering the past 70 years or so, of what he has boastfully called our great strides in medical science, we can hardly help wondering if those seven league strides haven't been in reverse, because there's been a marked decline in our nation's health and a shocking increase in the serious killer diseases during these very same years. These acute diseases that were supposed to have been conquered by vaccination have only been masked and then renamed to save face or suppressed until the retained poisons corroded the internal organs and developed into dangerous chronic diseases. Now, the following table will give us an idea, not the whole story, just an idea of what our present faulty methods are doing to our race. Now, I'm going to underline this, and I'm going to come back here, and I'm going to tell you a little bit of something. I don't know if this lady put what these faulty methods are doing to our race, but that's a pretty important statement. I don't think she knew what she was saying there, but I'm going to come back and point that out to you a little later. Here's the statistical increase in killer diseases over the past 70 years. Now, remember, this is written in 1974. Now, over the past 70 years, that's about 1900 to 1974. She says over the past 70 years. I'm just going to extrapolate this forward. It's worse today than it was in 1974. Boys and girls, it's worse today, 40 years later, than it was in 1970. Now, listen. Insanity in this country has increased by 400%. Cancer has increased 308%. Anemia has increased 300%. Epilepsy has increased 397%. Bright's disease increased 65%. Heart disease increased 179%. Diabetes increased 1,800%. And polio increased 680%. Hey, hang on here a second, children. aren't these diseases that have occurred now over the past 75 or 100 years, in spite of, not because the medical doctors gave these diseases to you. I mean, hell, they're doing everything they can. That's what they're telling you. We're just working our hearts out, trying to protect you from all these diseases, but they're 400, 300, and 1,800% worse. Now, just looking at diabetes here, increasing 1,800%, that's 18 times. So for every diabetic you had in 1900, 1975, you got 18. Hell, diabetes doubled in the last 20 years. From 1990 to 2010, diabetes has doubled, and it's coincidental, I know, but the sale of soda pop doubled at the same time. I'm not sitting here saying that soda pop causes diabetes. I'm just sitting here saying soda pop doesn't cure diabetes. We're drinking twice as much of it, and I didn't see diabetes drop by 50%. So I'm not throwing rocks at Coca-Cola. I'm just telling you Coca-Cola didn't prevent it. It might have caused it, but it sure as hell didn't prevent it. Now, never in the history of this country have preventable diseases flourished with such wild abandon, continuously being fed by the very drugs and commercialized irritants that set them into operation in the first place. Dr. Alexis Carrel of the Rockefeller Institute said this in Scientific Monthly for July of 1925, quote, although the adult individual today has much less chance of dying from smallpox, cholera, or typhoid than he had 50 years ago, he surely has more prospect of being tortured by some form of cancer, afflicted with slow diseases of the kidneys, or of the circulatory system, or of the endocrine glands, or of going insane. Modern medicine protects him against infections which kill rapidly, but leaves him exposed to the slower and more cruel diseases. Unquote. Annie Riley Hale, in a book called The Medical Voodoo, speaks of medicine as a system of healing, which after 5,000 years of trial and error is describing itself now as a science in the making, whose proudest showing to date is that it has enabled the race to swap smallpox for cancer and typhoid fever for diabetes and insanity, and may still be worthy of credence and patronage by its devoted followers. But what justification can there be for putting the whole power of the government back of such a system and the public treasury at its disposal, and to spread misleading propaganda about its own peculiar doctrines and methods, or to force them on the helpless? Now, although there are a number of far more successful and efficient systems of healing in this country, the medical system is the only one that gets the endorsement and support from the government. All of our tax-supported departments of health, hospitals, and institutions are under the domination of medical personnel. In spite of all of this financial support, public confidence, and full-scale experimentation and testing of all of their methods and theories, the Medical School of Healing has totally failed to control any of the killer diseases. It doesn't have a cure for any of them, not even for one of the mild diseases. Smallpox and other epidemics were largely controlled by improvements in sanitation and nutrition, many years before vaccination even became popularized. And yet, a tremendous sum of money has been poured into the medical coffers every year, with no accounting made for its use, and with no benefits being received. Isn't it time that this squandering of the public funds be stopped, and the better qualified practitioners be given a chance to salvage the wreckage before it's too late? Well, let me pause here for a moment and make another editorial comment. Notice here she says that in spite of all of the financial support and public confidence and full-scale experimentation and testing of all of these methods and theories, the Medical School of Healing has totally failed to control any of these killer diseases and doesn't have any cure for even the mild diseases. Well, isn't that something? Hang on, I got to give you a mid-course reminder here that you are listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily, worldwide, over the Internet and radio. Now, for more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archive. All of that can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling the Law School and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there, georgegordon.org. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're reviewing the book, The Poison Needle, by Eleanor McBean. Published in 1974, 10,000 copies were printed, published by the Health Research Council in Mokelum Hills, California. That's M-O-K-E-L-U-M-N-E. It's an odd word. I'm from California, and I never heard of that place. M-O-K-E-L-U-M-N-E, Hills, California, 95245. Eleanor McBean, M-C-B-E-A-N, The Poison Needle. You may find a copy in a used bookstore someplace, maybe even in a health food store. It could well be. This came out of a health food store. If you were to walk into your local health food store and say, hey, can you get me a copy of this book called The Poisoned Needle? They might look it up and see there might be somebody else publishing this that I don't know anything about. All right, getting back here to the point at hand. Now, I'm not sitting here saying that medical science is all hocus pocus. They actually do a lot of good work. For instance, if you've got cataracts on your eyes, you can have those cataracts removed. If you've got a bad hip, you can have a hip replacement. And if you've got some kind of a trauma, like you're shot in the chest with a .45, the best place for you to be treated is in the ER at a major hospital. They might be able to do something for you. But when it comes to these diseases, preventing disease, or plagues, or, the record of medical science has been totally lacking. Now, if only 3% of operations are really necessary or needed, then the other 97% are paying for doctors, airplanes, boat payments, and vacations. 97% of that, then, is unnecessary, isn't it? Well, then, let's take a look here and see maybe a vaccine or two might have some value. Maybe smallpox vaccine and polio vaccine had some value, and it eradicated smallpox, and maybe it eradicated polio. But what about all these other vaccines? And what about these diseases and syndromes that are coming up and the side effects that come up with them? Maybe we're causing more problem than we're curing. Has anybody ever thought of that? Well, there are a number of far more successful and efficient systems of healing in this country. We got the allopathic system, but then there's the naturopathic system and the chiropractic system. Could it be that there's something else that we could add to this which would make it better for us all? There's a tremendous sum of money being poured into these medical coffers every year, and there's no accounting being made for its use or for the benefits that are being received. Now, the other day, they had a little thing here on the news, and they said, wouldn't you like to run for cancer? And they've got this thingy going over here. I don't know exactly how it works, but a few thousand people get together, and they run this marathon race, or they run 5 or 10 miles and donate some money for cancer research. Well, hell, there's 14 cures for cancer right now, and you can't use any of them. And if you get caught using them, you'll go to prison without a doubt. They're not approved. And the three systems that are approved, cut, burn, and poison, only cure 37%, so the other 63% die. Well, why don't we concentrate on using these other systems and the other 11 cures for cancer and use them on the 63% that are dying? Well, we couldn't have that cancer. Boys and girls is a $500 billion a year industry. We can't have a cure to cancer. There hasn't been, isn't now, and there isn't going to be. You're not going to have any approved cancer cure. Not in America, you're not. You got your head up your dear ear if you think that's ever going to happen. And the reason for that is that it's a $500 billion a year industry. We're not throwing $500 billion a year away on a $25 shot. Come on, wake up. Now, truth wears no mask, seeks neither place nor applause, bows to no human shrine. She only asks for a hearing. Well, the increasing flood of evidence against vaccine and the growing demand for the unsuppressed facts about this subject of vaccine ought to be reviewed. And after half a century of medical practice, Dr. John Tilden made the following observation regarding the inadequate medical procedures. He said, quote, the ability to cure has not kept pace with diagnosis, and today we behold the scientific paradox of skilled physicians sometimes knowing exactly what disease the patient is suffering from, and then he's totally unable to cure the disease. So our ability to diagnose is accompanied by our impotence in curing. Is the true status of scientific medicine then being advanced? Clinicians are floundering about in a sea of speculation and uncertainty concerning cause and cure, and the best of them declare that autopsies prove that almost half of their diagnoses were wrong. Oh my God. Autopsies. You know, when somebody dies, we take him in, cut him open, and we say, oh my God, what killed this guy? Did you know that 50% of the diagnosis that is given by your doctor and all of the tests that you undergo, half of them are wrong? Hell, I didn't make that up. I'm just a reporter. I just wanted to tell you that. Now, Dr. Charles Mayo, in a radio broadcast, stated that at their clinic, autopsies show that they get only 20% of their diagnoses correct. Now, this is as of 1974. The last numbers that I see, it's worse today than it was in 1974. Listen, we're degenerating, boys and girls. We're not getting better and better. We're not curing more and more people of cancer. Well, at least not the percentages. Think about that. Think about it. In 1900, one out of 33 people is going to get cancer. 32 people are going to live their lives and never get cancer. 10 years from now, every single person in America, well, statistically, some people are going to get it two or three times, but, you know, statistically, every person in America is going to get cancer one time in his lifetime. We're not getting healthier and healthier. We're not getting better and better. We're getting poorer and poorer and worse. Every part of the body is represented by a specialist. And the irony of all of this specialized professional perfection is summed up in a few words. Namely, diagnosis is an elaborate system of summing up effects without one scintilla of knowledge of cause, and a treatment is a stupendous scheme of palliation with a braggadocio concerning immunization. But the question will not dawn. How is a disease to be prevented or cured when the cause is unknown? All 400 or more so-called diseases are nothing more than the expressions of our general systematic derangement, which states that I'm pleased to name toxemia or healing crisis. All right, let's think about that for a minute. You go to the physician's desk reference, and it lists 450 symptoms. If you've got certain symptoms, the doctor looks up the symptoms, and he says, aha, you've got scurvy. He looks up the symptoms. He looks at you. He's, oh, my God, you've got cancer. 50% of the time, he's wrong. You got that? 20% of the time, he's right. 50% of the time, he's wrong. 30% of the time, he's partially correct. He doesn't know what causes it. Ask your doctor. You walk in. He diagnoses you. And he says, you've got cancer. Oh, my God, what causes that? I don't know. The medical profession tells you plainly, I don't know what causes cancer. Do you have a cure for cancer? No. No, we don't have a cure. That's what they tell you, very plainly. But we do have a treatment, and for $100,000, we can cut, burn, and poison on you until you run out of money. They got a treatment. Now, the treatment actually works 37% of the time. If you come in here with cancer, 37% of the time, they can cure it for 5 years. They can keep you alive for 5 years. They can treat you for 5 years. If you die at the end of 5 years and one day, they got a cure. I know an old buddy of mine, he got cancer, and he didn't do anything about it. He went to the doctor. Doctor says, hey, you got cancer. Rich said, well, okay, thank you. And the doctor said, well, don't you want to treat it? No. Well, the doctor said, then you're going to die. Rich said, yep, that's true. But I don't need to spend $100,000 to die. Hell, I can go home and die free. And he did. It took him 6 years. That's right. Rich didn't do anything for his cancer, and he died. But he lived 1 year longer than he would have lived if he had been treated. Because, you know, when you're treated for cancer, your average lifespan is 18 months. Did you know that? If we aggressively treat your cancer, you'll live 18 months on average. If you live 5 years, we call it a cure. If you don't do anything, do you know what the average lifespan is? If you've got cancer and do nothing, the average lifespan is 6 years. Rich did nothing and lived the average lifespan of 6 years. And then it didn't cost him anything to die from cancer with an average lifespan of 6 years from his diagnosis. Had he treated it aggressively, it would have cost him $100,000 to die in 18 months, statistically and on average. I'm not telling people what to do. There's the numbers. You're an adult. Figure it out. Use your head. And then if you want to go to the doctor, we had a lady across the road over here, Kathy, and she got cancer. She went to the doctor. They had insurance. Her husband worked down here at the medical lab. He had all the insurance in the world. They treated her most aggressively. She died of cancer in about 18 months. That's what it cost. I don't know what the numbers were. Statistically, on average, they spent $100,000. Now, if the average is 100, some people are spending 2 and some are spending 50. I would imagine in her case, they spent 200. She had bone marrow transplants, and she had surgery, and she had chemotherapy. I mean, if there was anything they could do, they did it. They spared nothing. They had everything going. All right, now, toxemia, that's poisoning, is a state of body poisoning, self-generated or induced by vaccine serums, drugs, or other poisons. And that's Philosophy of Health by Tilden. Now, there's only two causes for disease here, boys and girls, so write this down so you got it in your repertoire here. And if you've got a symptom, one of these 450 symptoms, one of two things caused it, poison, toxin, or starvation. I was watching PBS last night, and they were talking about hair-lip children, you know, these children with cleft palate, they call that. That's a zinc deficiency. From the day you're born, from the day that you're conceived, until your body is fully formed, and as a fetus, fully formed, about an inch long, it takes 56 days. Every single day, during that 56 days, your body goes through some building process. And there's a point when the palate has to be closed up, and there has to be zinc in the mother's diet. And if there isn't zinc there, it won't close up, and the baby will be born with a cleft palate. Zinc deficiency. Now, all of these birth defects are caused by nutritional deficiencies or toxins. Now, there can be some poisons get in there and cause this. But most of the time, it's caused by a deficiency. And this is why it's very important for you pregnant women to have adequate nutrition. In fact, you ought to have something more than adequate so that you don't have a birth defect. Now, birth defects here in the United States affect 5% of births. 5%. That's 1 out of 20 is going to have a birth defect. Tuck it away in your heart. Now, after the 56 days, from then until the baby is born, he's just putting on weight. Now, that nutrition is still very important. As he's putting on weight, he needs this baby needs all of the nutrition that he can get so that he can be born healthy without some other kind of disease like asthma, cancer, you know, or some other debilitating disease like diabetes or something else. It's important. But the first 56 days is crucial, and the next, 180, 90 days is just very important. Now, these are pretty strong words. You know, we're talking about Dr. R.T. Trail, M.D., was another doctor who gave the medical method a long and thorough trial before abandoning it as a failure. He turned to nature and its simplicity and upon its sound basic laws of healing and brought about miracles of recovery from all kinds of diseases. After trying to justify the inconsistencies of medical theory, here's what he had to say. Why has not success in treating disease kept pace with the extraordinary progress of knowledge of other sciences? Well, the answer is ready. A successful practice of the healing art must be based upon the laws of life, the economy of vitality. The only foundation, therefore, of true healing is correct psychological principles, or physiological, I'm sorry, I said psychological, it's physiological principles. And here is precisely where the whole orthodox medical system of the present day fails. Utterly, and it totally fails. It has no physiological and biological science upon which to truly practice the healing art. Now, these are pretty strong words coming from a medical doctor. Medical doctors who know the system thoroughly. You know, medicine is paying. Medicine pays. It is a system for profitability. Medicine is in the business of making profit. And boy, does it make profit. It's pushing $2 trillion a year in gross sales. It's so valuable, even the government wants to get in on the act. Now, again, these are strong words coming from medical doctors who know the system thoroughly. Medicine is a paying game, financially speaking, and for successful practitioners to leave it for the sake of honesty, integrity, and idealism indicates that these cherished qualities are totally lacking in that branch of business. And it is this lack of correct physiological and biological principles that has enabled the medical profession to foist such an unscientific delusion as vaccination onto the public. Hey, did you catch that? Unscientific delusion. Let me underline that. This is a medical doctor, by the way, who came up with this conclusion. Now listen, medical doctors have a pretty good track record. Most of the cures for cancer have been discovered by medical doctors, and then they're totally squelched. And if these medical doctors try to use them, or any of the other medical practitioners try to use these cures, they are jailed for it. I'm out of time. I'm going to give you a final reminder here that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. Now, for more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log, schedule, and archives. Well, time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. We'll be talking about The Poison Needle by Eleanor McBean. Until then, we'll see you tomorrow night, God willing. Good night.